Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm bestselling author and co-creator of realeverything.com, Stacy Toth. I focus on being healthy inside and out through real life, food, and talk.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times bestselling author and creator of thepaleomom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Wow, listeners, I am still in Europe. And I'm probably drinking so much tea because my favorite thing about being on a cruise ship is that they bring you mint tea before bed for free. And that's why I'm excited about this week's show, The Benefits of Drinking Tea, Part 2. I am very hopeful that we have timed this correctly and that when I return, we'll have an update for you on our travels and fresh material. But in the meantime, we are in a time warp and we're going to be talking about drinking tea.
Which is an excellent opportunity to thank this week's podcast sponsor, Peak Tea. I mean, people will find out later in the show why we love Peak Tea and why Peak Tea is so amazing. But also, since we're going to talk about tea, like an amazing, super high quality brand of tea packets that are super convenient, excellent fit for this week's sponsor. And you can go to the link peaktea.life/thepaleoview to get 28% off plus free shipping off your order.
And that's PIQUETEA.life/thepaleoview. Sarah.
Yes.
How many questions did we get after?
We got enough that we are going to, and our longtime listeners are going to laugh right now. We're going to do a rapid fire. I'm using air quotes because I know we're terrible at rapid fires.
I was laughing a lot as you said it.
Yeah. I didn't even count the number of questions, but it was enough that I lost count. So I was like, oh yeah, call it a rapid fire.
What I love is that, let's be real, we can only answer 3 to 4 rapid fire questions. And you've got way more than that listed here. And
7 or 8.
I am already entertained that you think we're going to get through all these. So, but thank you listeners so much for reaching out and submitting questions after our last show on the health benefits of drinking tea. We talked a lot about the antioxidant factor and the different ways in which tea in particular improves health. So I'm going to let Sarah give a little intro and recap on the science of that. And then we can hopefully answer more than 2 of these questions.
Yeah. So I think we should say this is specifically a follow-up to episode 328, in which we talked about the health benefits of tea. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about tea way back then, 5-6 months ago, whenever that was because I had just finished doing a whole bunch of new research for my new gut microbiome book, specifically on how tea impacts the gut microbiome. And that was really, really exciting. So I wanted to sort of pull that together as a topic for a show. And so really, I mean, the take-home message of that episode is that tea is associated with a huge range of health benefits. Regular tea consumption can decrease risk of diabetes, liver disease, cardiovascular disease, some forms of cancer. It can also help to improve the composition of the gut microbiome. And that is all attributable to the antioxidant polyphenols in green and black tea specifically is what we were talking about. And it's a pretty, like, it's a pretty impressive resume and one that makes all of us tea drinkers, you know, basically, well, we're too prim and proper when we're drinking our tea to really shout for joy, but certainly we'll raise our pinkies to it.
Took me a minute to get off of mute because I was mocking you in my head and laughing.
Are you raising your pinky? Because I'm still raising my pinky.
I'm not. I am not fancy enough. Although maybe after I've been in Europe for 2.5 weeks, I'll come back with my pinky raised.
I see that. I see that actually for sure happening.
I legit love getting mint tea before bed every night on a cruise ship and just having it like magically arrive and feeling fancy. So I will definitely have been teeing it up. But one of the things that we talked about on the last episode that I do want to remind people of is that tea is one of those foods that can really add or detract from your health depending on the quality of tea that you're drinking. And one of the reasons that we originally partnered with Peak Tea was because they have an incredibly high quality product that has 12 times the polyphenol of regular teas. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about. And in addition to that, the super high quality concentrated crystals just are super convenient, and they also melt into cups with hot water, making it something, and I guess cold water. We talked about this before.
Hot water only, and some of them are cold and hot. But it says on the box, so you know what you're getting when you order it, whether it's one that can be made directly into iced tea or needs to be made into hot tea and then cooled down for iced tea, if iced tea is your thing.
Well, my kids really love it because it's instant, and everybody knows you love instant gratification. They've got a variety of flavors, and I love knowing that there isn't like a bag of BPA soaking in hot water that, you know, you're then drinking and all that kind of stuff. So, definitely look into toxic screened tea and high quality tea. We recommend, and our sponsor this week is Peak Tea. So again, PIQUETEA.life/thepaleoview for 28% off plus free shipping. And thank you, Peak, for coming back onto the podcast and being such a quality product that we can feel good recommending and using for our families.
I have switched to Peak as my main tea. So this is like literally, it's like my daily ritual.
And you are a snob about tea. Let me just tell you, listeners, I have been to Sarah's house, and I will never forget the first time I went to your house. Three things stuck out at me. First, you made me waffles. So let me just put that out there because I'm going to make fun of you about two things. Let me just say something nice. Other than your family is wonderful and I adore them. You made me delicious waffles, but the problem was that you ate raw lettuce and you had fuzzy tea. Like, you offered to make me tea and then you pulled out a bag of what looked to be rotting vegetables. And I was like, no, I'm going to pass. I'm good. I'm good on that. So I'm happy to hear that you've switched to something a little less intimidating. Tea? Yeah. Yeah. It was, I don't know what you were drinking.
Huh. I wish I could remember what that was. Must have been something amazing before I discovered the even more amazing Peak Tea.
The bag reminded me of something that high schoolers, people who live in Denver, Washington, D.C., San Francisco might legally procure for themselves. Like, that's what your tea looked like.
So I probably had a reusable tea bag with just like really nice high quality tea leaves in it.
It was a situation. I'm just saying that these crystals.
Wait, that's like the fanciest tea.
Yeah, it's
scared me. You're saying like tea crystals are like way up because you don't have to deal with any like.
They don't scare people who come over and you offer them tea and then you show them a frightening situation. No, that's what I'm saying.
It's just cheesecloth. What?
No. All right. Come on. Let's get to these rapid fire questions.
Excellent. Do you want to read them?
Sure. Because that always goes so well.
But they're all short. Stacey, I know you can do it. I have faith in you.
All right. If you have faith.
I do.
I'm willing to take it on. What's in the tea that makes it prebiotic?
So the thing that actually influences gut microbiome composition is all of the antioxidant chemicals, so like polyphenols that are in it, but they're not influencing gut microbiome composition through a prebiotic effect. So polyphenols basically influence bacterial health without being a food. So you can think of it this way. We have a lot of bacteria in certain areas of our gut that are anaerobes and certain ones that are are aerobes. So some use oxygen and some don't. So if you use oxygen antioxidants are really, really good for your health. So that's where an antioxidant can be very, very helpful. And then polyphenols also can act as antimicrobials. So what they're actually doing is kind of two things. So they're actually improving the health of beneficial bacteria, and they're actually killing species that are pathogenic. So pathogenic species are just more susceptible to these specific antimicrobials. So things like Clostridium difficile, E. coli, Salmonella will die, and then you'll create like the space for Bifidobacterium lactobacillus to thrive. So polyphenols are sort of well known to influence gut microbiome composition, but it's not specifically through a prebiotic effect. Are we impressed with how quick and succinct that answer was? Because I'm super impressed with myself right now.
I am impressed. That was not rapid fire. I think you can do better with this one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
How much tea should I drink every day and when? But before you answer that, I'm going to rephrase it.
I was going to say you said should.
The question that you wrote down that you wanted me to say said should. So I'm going to rephrase it. And I think this is a good exercise for our listeners in terms of mental reframing. How much tea is ideal to drink daily and at what time?
So studies measure the threshold of tea consumption for an effect in different ways. So some will look at populations of people, look at quartiles. Some will actually give people certain amounts of tea, but generally somewhere in the 3 to 4 cups a day range is optimal. And because even white tea has a little bit of caffeine, but green and black tea certainly do, you definitely want to keep caffeine to the first half of the day, morning hours, say cut off, depending on how sensitive you are to caffeine, say by noon, just to make sure you're not interfering with sleep.
Does it matter what kind of tea I drink?
So different teas have different phytochemicals, so different antioxidants in them and different amounts of antioxidants. So there have been a few different studies that have compared different types of teas and the antioxidant effects. Generally, green tea has the highest antioxidants. Black tea is sort of second. And then you're going to start getting a mix, different herbal teas typically aren't quite as high as green and black tea for antioxidants. And they tend to have different antioxidants. But actually, the biggest effect is how long you steep for. So definitely green and black tea have the most antioxidants, but also steeping for 5 to 6 minutes is where you start to sort of maximize. And from there, you get a little bit more if you go out to 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. But most green and black teas want to be steeped for at least 5 minutes in order to maximize the antioxidant content.
I like the idea of drinking a variety of teas because just like vegetables, you want to balance all those different kinds of antioxidants and health benefits. So that's just my personal thought process with kind of anything that I'm approaching from nutrient value.
I typically switch. So I start my day off. Actually, I start my day off with a cup of coffee. I know this is a tea show, but we are going to talk about coffee if we get to all of our rapid fire questions. And then I switch to tea, and I typically have 3 or 4 cups of tea between my 6 a.m. cup of coffee and noon. And then I switch to herbal tea, and I have herbal tea for the second half of the day. So, and it's mainly because I would far prefer to drink a hot beverage over a cold beverage any day. And I don't like just plain hot water. So that's my typical. And then with green and black teas, I tend to drink more green than black, but I tend to mix it up and pick something different every day. And then same with the herbal teas. So I do just sort of naturally, I think just so I don't get bored too. Like it's awesome to have all the different benefits, variety and everything. Right. But I also, I just like having different flavors. I go through my little, what do I feel like today? It's fun.
It's fun.
I know it's fun. I
personally have
it's a cherished moment of my day.
I have an extensive tea collection, and I feel super fancy when people come over and I offer them tea and they say, yes, what kind do you have? And I can bring them my basket.
You do, and you have it in a nice basket too.
All right. Can I get gut health benefits if I only drink herbal caffeine-free teas?
So The studies that have looked at the impact of tea on the gut microbiome have been predominantly in green tea, and there are a couple of studies in black tea. When I saw this rapid fire question, I went and have a look and, you know, are there studies with mint tea or chamomile or rooibos? Like, are there other studies? I could not find any study specifically looking at the impact of any herbal tea on the gut microbiome. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't have an effect. Herbal teas do still have antioxidants and polyphenols, and we know that polyphenols are beneficial for the gut microbiome. But so green and black tea, it matters how much long you steep it for, and it matters what the high quality is. That's why Peak Tea is such a great sponsor, because they will literally have 12 times the polyphenols of a store brand. And even in a store, the most expensive, highest quality store brand might have 5 times more polyphenols than the cheapest store brand. Like, there's orders of magnitude difference in terms of the polyphenol content between a high quality tea and a not high quality tea. With herbal teas, you have the same quality difference, but you also have different plants just have different amounts of polyphenols to offer. So on a purely theoretical, hypothetical basis, herbal teas that are rich in polyphenols should still benefit the gut microbiome, but there hasn't been a quality scientific study that has actually quantified that yet.
I'm surprised that you have not found a study.
That's because one doesn't exist yet. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. So there's plenty of studies looking at health benefits of herbal teas for other systems, but in terms of gut health benefits, I haven't seen that yet.
Your hypothesis,
mm-hmm.
without a scientific study,
mm-hmm.
based on the fact that the gut benefit is X, how can you apply that to herbal drinks? Why? Do you see how this is the opposite of rapid fire?
Oh, yes, I do. Okay. I super see how it's the opposite of rapid fire. That's fine. The way that you can apply it, at least you can develop a hypothesis, is by looking at the mechanism. So you say that green and black tea improve gut microbiome composition through polyphenols. Herbal teas also contain polyphenols, therefore they should have a similar, if perhaps more dilute effect, because they tend not to be as concentrated a source of polyphenols on the gut microbiome. But that's the hypothesis. It has not yet been tested in the scientific literature. But it makes sense from a mechanistic standpoint that you would get similar benefits drinking only herbal teas for someone who, say, is very, very sensitive to caffeine or has really out-of-control stress and needs to be in a caffeine-free period of time in order to get their stress responses under control. For those people, the only thing probably is that you probably need to drink more than that 3 to 4 cups of herbal tea to hit the cusp, because depending on which herbal tea you're looking at, some can be anywhere between like 10% and say 80% of the polyphenol content of green and black, but like half is kind of a good ballpark for most herbal teas.
Got it. If I were to add milk or sweetener to my tea, will I still get the same gut health benefits?
So I'm going to take umbrage with the word sweetener.
Can we go back and re-examine your use of the word umbrage? Is that referring to a Harry Potter professor who was bad?
That's a word. If you take umbrage, you get your feathers riled. You get your hackles raised. You get your panties in a knot.
This blows my mind as to why this professor's name was Umbridge. All right. Go ahead and take Umbridge with this question.
Oh, I'm so glad I was able to expand your vocabulary today, Stacey.
Who would have known I was an English major?
It's one of my favorite phrases when it happens to be the right phrase. So when I hear the word sweetener, I am hearing things like stevia or I'm hearing, right, like I want to make the assumption, and I know assumptions are bad, but I want to make the assumption that our listeners are not using like sweet and low, but the word sweetener to mean it's this person did not specifically say sugar. And so I just want to take a step back. We've talked about this on the podcast before. I have plenty of articles on my website about really our bodies are much better adapted to small amounts of natural sugars like unrefined cane sugar, maple syrup, maple sugar, molasses, or honey than we are to any sugar substitute. So any of the sugar alcohols cause gut dysbiosis. So xylitol, erythritol, all of those sugar alcohols cause gut dysbiosis problems. Stevia is actually a now well understood endocrine disruptor. There was a landmark 2017 paper that finally sort of unequivocally proved that stevia is messing with testosterone and progesterone signaling. So I don't endorse stevia. Monk fruit has problems. Also, it tastes disgusting. So honey is really, I think, the best sweetener to put in tea. A, it's traditional because it tastes delicious. B, honey actually has fermentable sugars in it that our gut microbiome loves. So honey is the only sweetener that actually has a positive effect. I use the word sweetener. It's the only natural sugar that has a positive effect on the gut microbiome. And so I would say that honey would be a great choice, but that whole 10% of calories from added sugars is still a real thing. So even when we're using natural sweeteners like maple syrup, like honey, like molasses, we do really still need to be cognizant of how much that's adding up in terms of percent of our total caloric intake. So honey could potentially enhance the gut health benefits because honey is also beneficial for the gut microbiome. I haven't seen a paper that has looked at whether or not those effects are synergistic. So they may or may not be additive, but honey by itself is beneficial for the gut microbiome. Dairy is very complicated in terms of its gut health effects. So A1 dairy, which is what most dairy that you can get in a grocery store is, so that's referring to the form of beta casein in the dairy, is actually pretty bad for the gut microbiome. And what's interesting is there's just a handful of studies, but the picture is starting to look like A2 beta casein dairy, which is what we get from sheep or goat milk. You can get some cow milk that's specifically A2 dairy is actually beneficial. So in terms of the addition of milk to anything, A2 dairy definitely has a different effect on the gut microbiome if you're not sensitive to dairy. But again, sort of there aren't studies that do these combinations. So I've been combing through literally thousands of studies writing this new book that look at how a particular dietary factor influences gut microbiome, but it's always one thing that's being modulated. So once you discover that, say in this case, right, green and black tea are great for the gut microbiome, honey is great for the gut microbiome, and A2 dairy gut microbiome are great for the gut microbiome. I've never seen a study that has said, well, if you put all of those three things together, is that like triple the benefit? Or what's the magnitude? Is it more than each one by themselves? So that those types of studies were nowhere. In fact, I would go so far as to say scientific researchers are nowhere near getting into that level of complication in terms of impacting gut microbiome. So right now, most of what we know is from looking at all the different pieces in isolation. In terms of adding milk's effect, certainly there's some research in coffee showing that milk can actually interfere with the absorption of one of the main antioxidants in coffee called a chlorogenic acid. And black tea is actually also quite rich in chlorogenic acid. Green tea has less. So because it binds with chlorogenic acid, it slows down absorption and potentially blocks some of it. Healthy digestion can kind of unbind the proteins in milk with the chlorogenic acid, but it typically will reduce absorption by something like 20%. That happens in coffee. Presumably that would also happen in tea, but again, I haven't seen the study that's actually measured it. So there is that one slightly not awesome effect of adding milk to tea that potentially slowing down or blocking part, a fraction of the antioxidants from being absorbed.
That's fascinating for me, the absorption, because I always think of adding a fat as helping to absorb. Do you know what I mean? Like whether you're blending butter or adding heavy cream or whatever to coffee or anything really. I think of vitamins and minerals as needing a fat to properly absorb. And so I'm like, how could this be?
Yeah, it really comes down to having fat with something fat soluble will help absorption. So eating fat with your fat soluble vitamins dramatically increases absorption. But things that are water soluble, typically adding a fat's not going to hurt. So typically, adding a fat's not going to block absorption. This is specifically a protein in the milk that is binding with the chlorogenic acid. So it's actually like this would still happen with skim milk, for example. And presumably that means that if you went with something like ghee, then you don't need to worry about this. And blended it in. I mean, that makes sense in coffee, right? The buttered coffee craze.
Yeah.
Which I have opinions about.
But I also like to make matcha lattes in a similar capacity. Yeah. So, okay. Anyway, moving along. Are you ready?
Rapid fire.
Is there anything I should add to the tea to boost gut health benefits?
Can I give a really snarky response to this question?
Is the answer... Is there anything I should add to the tea to boost gut health benefits?
no, I mean, I think that in terms of like adding to the tea itself, no, tea is a great gut health superfood. The other things that we need to be adding is like the whole picture for gut health. So the gut healthy diet with the lots of vegetables and seafood and dialing in our vitamin D and getting enough sleep and managing stress and being active and spending time outside. And I think we did now because we've pre-recorded so many of these shows before your great European adventure. I have lost complete track of when we did a show where we talked about gut health, but I feel like it was relatively recently. Because it was last week for us, but we talked about the menu of gut microbiome things. Like all of those things are really really beneficial, and they don't need to be done at the same time as tea. So so there's nothing necessarily that we can add to tea that is going to like make tea extra wonderful, but tea is just one piece of a thing that we can do for our gut microbiome or for our gut health in general. So that means it's on top of a healthy, vegetable-rich diet and all the lifestyle stuff.
If I was reading between the lines here, I guess I would ask the question, does adding collagen boost gut health benefits? And that would be something I would say, well, that's a different kind of thing that you're then adding to the picture, but it's not like adding to or taking away from the tea. It's just you're combining two things.
Sure.
That can help. And, right.
And I do not know if say collagen, for example, would in, you know, would, if you know, collagen peptides are individual, they're mostly di and tripeptides. So they're probably too small to be, for example, blocking the absorption of chlorogenic acid. So that's probably fine. I think there's not a compelling reason to go out of our way to be adding things to our tea, right? It's not like if you have it with a bit of lemon that it's super different in terms of how those polyphenols are processed. So there's not a thing to necessarily do to make that tea even better. My point more is that tea is one piece to this bigger puzzle of choices that we can make that are good for our guts.
Awesome. So speaking of another choice that you can make that's good for your guts, one of your favorite topics for those longtime listeners and friends of Sarah, you will come to find out that she loves coffee.
I do. So I'm like equally a coffee snob and tea snob. I really do love both. Now, there are some very compelling reasons to choose tea over coffee, most notably the effects on cortisol. So for our listeners, you know, why are we focusing on tea if coffee can do the same? It's not quite that simple. So coffee seems to magnify our stress responses, especially when we're habitual coffee drinkers. So that means that if you have your morning coffee and then you hop in the car and you drive to work and you hit a traffic jam, that coffee is going to mean that traffic jam stresses you out more than if you weren't a habitual coffee drinker. And interestingly, even though this is believed to be related to caffeine, green and black tea don't appear to have this effect, which is fascinating. But that being said, you know, when we're talking about gut health benefits, coffee is also very, very rich in polyphenols and phytochemicals, and it has these special kinds of like really short fibers called galactomannans and arabinogalactans that are fermentable. There's, you know, a small amount, like, but still like half a gram of soluble fiber per cup of coffee. Like it's, we don't think of coffee usually as being a fiber source. And studies do show that they can help increase some beneficial species and also decrease some pathogenic ones, sort of very, very similar to tea. So the question here is, can I still drink coffee and tea and get those gut health benefits? And the answer is yes. So there's definitely some unique benefits to tea consumption that are above and beyond what we can get from coffee. There's definitely a stronger body of scientific literature showing potential concerns for coffee drinkers. So there's really interestingly, coffee is inflammatory for some people and anti-inflammatory for others. And there's some research that's trying to identify a genetic link, why some people might have this inflammatory response and some people might have an anti-inflammatory response to coffee that doesn't appear to exist for tea. So once again, tea seems to be beneficial for everyone and doesn't seem to be, you know, for only a subset of people. If you have a specific gene, it's good. And if you don't, it's bad. But coffee does. So coffee has these like weird caveats that come with it that tea doesn't. That being said, if you're not a person who's having an inflammatory response to coffee and your stress is not out of control, you can get gut health benefits by doing what I do, which is my one cup of coffee in the morning and then my 3 to 4 cups of tea afterwards, which is, I will admit fully right now, that is quite a lot of caffeine. I happen to have the slow caffeine metabolizing gene, but then the gene that says I make a ton of the enzyme. So my body is just genetically programmed to process caffeine in such a way that I don't have highs and lows from it, but that I can process it really, really well so that it doesn't interfere with my sleep. And that was just winning the genetic lottery. And given all the other terrible genes I have, I get to win this one and I'm not going to apologize for it. But the main part of this is that there are also gut health benefits to coffee. The what about alcohol part of this question? There's actually gut health detriments from alcohol. So alcohol increases leaky gut, feeds pathogenic strains, especially like pathogenic E. coli, and it also helps to transport endotoxin into the body. So the very, very inflammatory protein in the cell membrane of gram-negative bacteria like E. coli, incredibly inflammatory, drives inflammation like crazy, is more easily transported into the body when we have alcohol. So coffee, okay for a lot of people. Alcohol, alcohol comes with a pretty steep price. So from a gut health perspective, that's sad news for most people.
Yeah, I can personally attest to noticing health deterioration when consuming alcohol, especially like when I was training, I could immediately see it in my performance and everything from sleep quality to all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's a ton of N=1 as well as research out there on alcohol. I know that there's, you know, antioxidants in fermented grape juice, but there's antioxidants in blueberries too. So
and tea.
Yes, exactly. And you know, fermented tea and all different kinds of things. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many different kinds of options out there. I know if you miss alcohol, doing like making your own or buying kombucha out of tea is a really special way to put something in a wine glass. And usually it's the social situation that we miss. It's not actually the alcohol itself. So if you can recreate that specialness, or maybe just like make your own bubble water and put some, you know, fresh citrus juice in there or whatever, I think that 9 times out of 10, that gives me what I'm looking for. And I just have to kind of mentally prepare for the fact that I'm going to, you know, put kombucha in a glass of wine. And I feel so much better. You know, it's just, yeah, it's the social situation that I think we all want to be a part of. So how will I know if tea is helping my gut health?
This is a really great question. So this falls under the banner of experimenting on ourselves. Which there's a few things that make for a good experiment. So one is not changing too many variables at a time. So if you're really just looking to like see like how does changing this one thing impact my gut health, just do that one thing. And for like, you know, dedicate a good 3 to 4 weeks to this experiment. So just add more tea and do a measurement that is before and after and see how it's changed. And maybe it's a measurement you can do once a week. I'm going to suggest some possible ways you could go about this. Some you would probably, I mean, if you have a lot of disposable income, maybe you wanted to do this every week, but it seems a bit silly. So things that you can look at, you could look at any symptoms related to a chronic illness that maybe is tied to gut health. So like any autoimmune disease is going to be tied to gut health. So that's something that you could look at. So then it could be quality of life assessments. It could just be a symptom journal. Anything like that might help. You can also look at markers of disease activity, markers of inflammation, because gut health and inflammation are incredibly tightly linked. You could, if you have a doctor who's super on board to order some tests, you could look at markers of gut permeability, so leaky gut. So the two, lactulose mannitol test is sort of the most established one, but it really only detects like super leaky gut. The new test that is starting to hit functional medicine practices, there's some ways to go about getting one, is called a serum zonulin test. So zonulin is not supposed to get in your bloodstream, but it does if you have a leaky gut. So that is another option, and see if that's changed over that, say, month time period of just adding tea. You could also do a microbiome analysis and look at the composition of your gut microbiome. This is definitely an expensive way to go about experimenting on yourself, but also the nerdiest way and like super interesting. So I would definitely recommend looking for one of the microbiome analyses, one of the at-home tests that their methodology is called 16S ribosomal RNA or 16S RNA. And that just means they're looking at the RNA of the bacteria that are in your stool, that, and then comparing that to a library to identify them. That's different than the technology of like what will grow, which is a very functional way to look at the gut microbiome, because it also looks at not just what's there, but what's still alive enough as it's passing out of your body in a bowel movement to be able to grow. So it gives you a sense of activity as well. For this type of analysis, you'd want to do a 16S RNA analysis. And those are kits like Ubiome, Viome, LC Sciences. There's a whole pile. I do not know the quality differences between all of them, so I can't attest to that. I just know that there are a lot of different options for that type of test, but the 16S ribosomal RNA is the buzzword you're looking for. But you could also do the like stool quality test of look in the toilet after you go to the bathroom and look and see what that looks like on the Bristol stool form scale. Things like consistently floating is not good, but floating once in a while is okay. Big pieces of recognizable material shows a deficiency in digestion. So just kind of looking at those types of things, looking at color, generally a lighter brown is related to higher fiber intake and higher short chain fatty acid intake. So that would be something that would, you know, be a good sign. So you could just also do this in a very sort of qualitative way. But that's, I mean, there's lots of ways of experimenting on ourselves. And this gives you the spectrum of, I'm going to write down how I feel one day and look at my poop in the toilet, all the way to, I'm going to do a super fancy test on myself and you know, spend $1,000 on this like super cool experiment. And then you've got a few options in the middle.
I'm really glad I didn't need to answer that, because I feel like I've had my requisite poo discussion lately. Mm. I feel like you clumped a whole bunch of these together for me, like, ha, 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 let me mess with Stacey. and I feel like that's just going to continue as we talk about gut health. Great. Wonderful.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's really hard to talk about gut health without talking about poo.
I know. I'm 100% on board with the message. I just don't want to talk about it. Okay. Now I've lost.
Fire.
I've lost
fire.
All concentration.
No, we got it.
Will tea? Oh, come on.
I did not.
You did. Sorry, you did. You set me up. Will tea help me with constipation? Not that I have it, because I don't.
No. This is from a listener.
Somebody else.
The answer is no. There was an old paper from 1981 that showed that drinking huge amounts of tea, they were actually looking at 2 liters a day, which is like 8 cups, may have slightly increased constipation. But there was a 2014 paper in rats or mice, I can't remember. The 1981 one was in people. The 2014 one, again, it was 800 milligrams per kilogram of black tea. Prevented constipation, but like that's it in the medical literature, and it's two different, they're both looking at extreme levels of tea consumption, and one shows one way and one shows the other, but nope, there's not really, this doesn't seem to impact that system unless you kind of did this what I would call like a hand wavy explanation of, well, if you correct the gut microbiome and it's the gut microbiome that's doing it, I mean, maybe you're just more hydrated too, right? So there's a lot of different things that go into impacting transit time and stool quality. And tea consumption can kind of fit under some of that umbrella, but it's not a magic cure for constipation.
Okay. Moving right along.
I think this is the last one. I think we're on the last one.
This one is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. What about the fluoride in tea? Like, that is such an open-ended question. I'm like, how are you going to answer this rapid fire?
So, I mean, we've actually talked about fluoride. I mean, it was a long time ago on the podcast. I vividly remember doing hours and hours and hours and hours of research.
Yeah, it was like a toothpaste type show. Yeah.
So we've talked about it mainly from a dental health perspective, but we got into a little bit about fluoridated water towards the end. And the sum total of that is like fluoride applied directly to teeth does actually help strengthen enamel and reduce cavities, but there's not a good argument for fluoridating water. And there's potentially some reasons to be concerned, especially once fluoride exposure gets high enough to cause fluoridosis, which can weaken bones. It can potentially sequester in your pineal gland and over decades affect melatonin production. So there's definitely some reasons to not want to consume all of the fluoride. And that's a really astute question, because tea is a natural source of fluoride. So so rather than adding fluoride to municipal water, this is a place where humans would have naturally been exposed to it for the centuries of tea consumption. So what's really interesting is fluoride levels in tea varies dramatically. So tea plants sequester fluoride from the soil. So the amount of fluoride in the leaves or flowers is completely dependent on the exact location where it's being grown. And it can be about as high as fluoridated municipal water. So like 1 to 3 parts per million-ish level. So it's it it is in that same range. Now, what's really interesting is there is sort of this growing body of scientific literature showing fluoridated water maybe not so awesome, and it's starting to correlate with some, you know, increased risk of bone fractures, things like that, that you would expect from too much fluoride getting into the structure of our bones. And we don't see that with high levels of tea consumption. Now, why? It could be that the polyphenols have some protective effect against the impact of fluoride. But what I can tell you, what I do is that I stick with high quality tea because fluoride tends to be higher in low quality tea. And I always make it with filtered water. So I'm not adding fluoride from my municipal water to the tea that I'm making. And then I can also say, as a wonderful way to wrap up, our awesome sponsored podcast from Peak Tea is that Peak Tea actually screens for fluoride as part of their triple toxin screen. So they screen for heavy metals, pesticides, and toxic molds, and basically everything that is a common problem with poor quality tea. So that's the reason why I feel even better about them as a podcast sponsor.
I learned something new and I'm even more excited as well. I feel like such a ham.
Do you take umbrage with anything yet?
I'm going to take umbrage everywhere. Frankly, I think I might change my middle name. I also want to thank PT for the show, and Sarah, I'm thanking you because you actually accomplish all of those questions in a reasonable time frame. I'm kind of blown away, listeners. I think it's really a record. If you still have questions about drinking tea, please feel free to comment on social media or on the blog post where you can find our podcast show notes. We'll have links to the things we've talked about here today, as well as the link to our sponsor, peaktea.life/thepaleoview. And as a reminder, that gets you 28% off plus free shipping if you wanted to try out or replenish your Peak Tea basket, as I have. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to being back stateside with you next week. Not actually. I'm going to be honest. I probably will want to stay in Europe, but that's okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
All things must come to an end, and I'll be back stateside with, like, time to focus on helping creatively with the blog and doing all kinds of things. I'm not going to know what to do with myself, and I'm sure I'll be super annoying and all up in social media. So that's next week. I'll be back, and listeners, as always, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show and you think that somebody else would enjoy it, your review, your sharing, your recommendations help us reach greater audience, and we cannot thank you enough. Have a wonderful week/month. I'll be back soon.
And we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Yeah. Is there a way when you're in a document to go back to the directory? Because Matt has an aversion to tabs being open.
What?
Which is really...
He should not look at my computer then.
Like a fundamental problem in our marriage.
Okay. I'm just going to count the number of tabs I have open in just this window. 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That's just one window. How many do I have open this one? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So that's 27 tabs, Matt. 27 tabs. Do you know that's 9 times 3 is 27? That's how many tabs I have open. 27. I mean, that's
plus an extra three.
It's 27 tabs between two windows.
I feel like this is what multitaskers do. Like, you got to be able to bounce back and forth. What did Cassie call it? Not multitasking. What did she had like a good name that made me feel good about it.
It was, yeah, no, she did have a really good word for it.
Maximizer. That's what maximizer. That's what task maximizers do. We've got our tasks up. We know we got to bounce between, and we're saving time from having to like repetitively relook at things. Like right now, I just spent 4 minutes getting to the podcast folder.